You called Lorne Michaels. I'm curious how that conversation went.
It was relatively short. I had a friend who had his home phone number through a job of his. He, you know, basically had, in those days, like the Rolodex of the person he worked for. And one day he was reading off names to me, you know, like Roman Polanski, Mick Jagger.
And you were in your 20s at that point?
Oh, yeah. I was just out of college. So I called him up, figuring Sunday was the day off, and he picked up the phone. And I just, like, pitched in quickly. Like, I knew I had just minutes. And I was just like, you know, hey, I got your number from a friend, and I just wanted to, you know, I'm new to the city, but I am great at writing quick, short things, and I would just love to work on the show, and maybe you could read something, and there's just no sound on the other side, and so you just keep babbling, and finally I finished, and a bit more silence, and then he was like, how did you get my number? And I was like, oh yeah, from a friend who happened to have it. Like, well, please don't call me home ever again.
At the top of the show, you heard director Neil LaBute, whose new 10x10 series is now available on the St. Louis Actors Studios Twitter account. The series was originally written as exclusive content for DirecTV's audience channel and has rarely been seen since its initial airing on television. Ten by Ten is a collection of original, unedited monologues featuring Jenna Fischer of The Office, Richard Kind of Curb Your Enthusiasm, Bill Pullman, Jason Patrick, Judith Light, Adam Brody, Louisa Krauss, Frederick Weller, Maggie Grace, and Amy Madigan. You're listening to The Portland Podcast. We're a BBC-flavored independent talk show based in Portland, Oregon, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Gregory Drucker Day. We're also going to be chatting with director Ryan Barton Grimley later on in the show. He gives us the scoop on his next feature film from RBG Films, Hawk and Rev, Vampire Slayers. Speaking of vampires, make sure to tune in to Sci-Fi for Season 5 of Van Helsing out later this year. Neil LaBute is an executive producer for the series. More now from Neil on 10x10.
Hey, this is Neil LaBute.
Oh, how you doing? Good afternoon.
I'm good. How are you?
Fantastic. I'm enjoying your 10x10 series.
Oh, thank you.
I think it's exactly what I need to be watching right now.
Well, I can't imagine that that's true, but I'm glad that you are. I mean, you got to watch something. I suppose there's a lot of free time right. for most folks, anyway.
Yeah. Well, they're just so intimate. I feel very involved as someone who's watching these short films. And I love this take. 10 short films, 5 shot in New York, 5 in LA, 1 take, black and white, singular frame, 10 minutes. And we get to spend intimate time with some of the best actors in the game. Man 40s, Jason Patrick. Want to start off with him because I think he's a vampire himself. I think he should be on Van Helsing because he seemingly has not aged since his early films back in the 90s.
Yeah, I know. He's not quite Paul Rudd, who actually hasn't aged a day, but he's right in the ballpark. Yeah, he's one of those guys.
Now, that was framed a little differently than the other shorts that I've watched. It was set in a church.
Yeah, it was because of the nature of the piece, when you get to the end and you realize, oh, that he's speaking, you know, as someone who's passed away. It was a little harder for us to think, where are we going to set this? Should we set it in the bleachers? You know, should we set it in his home? And, you know, someone came up with the idea of the church. I don't remember where that idea came in, but I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And it was such a beautiful thought. Knowing you're going to shoot in black and white is also nice because it really, you can really play with the contrast of that dark and light stuff. And great cinematographer from Europe. And, when you're only going to have one shot, you really want to make it count. So it's, you know, it was very important what that frame looked like. So we were very careful.
Yes, Roger Stoffer's very accomplished.
Yeah, very, very fine guy.
Now, he's got a great sense of depth. I notice a lot of depth in these shots.
Always looking for that. I mean, I've made a couple of movies with him as well. He's always, you know,
you have.
A flat wall is his enemy. He doesn't like anything really too close behind people. He wants to have that depth and be able to like fuzz out that background and play with lights. He likes to drop like really strong, you know, lights in where you can see them. And he's got a beautiful aesthetic.
Yeah, there's some nice details of the fan in the corner and people just, going about their business in the background. I felt that added something to these shorts. I think he worked with you on some Velvet Morning, too.
He did. He did that. He shot, he also shot Lakeview Terrace and he shot Death at a Funeral. So we've done a few things together. Yeah, he's quite a good guy.
I was very impressed with Jenna Fisher's performance. I'm not sure if she was shooting The Office when this was shot, but that was very intense.
No, I think The Office was over at that point.
Really?
Yeah, she was. We had done a play together in New York, and so her name came up, and I thought, something a lot of people haven't seen is her as a dramatic actress, and so with it was a piece that made a lot of sense that way, to give her something fresh to do. And she came out to New York to do it. She's usually based in L.A., but we shot half of them in New York and half in L.A., but not everybody was in their home base. A couple of them we had to shuttle around.
Her look at the end of that piece was heartbreaking.
Yeah, very much so. Yep, she read that beautifully.
Yeah, I mean, some very memorable performances, too. Fred Weller at the Cigar Bar. I loved the way that was framed. It felt like I was right there listening to his confessional.
Yeah, you were meant to sort of be who he was talking to. Yeah, and it was that was a tough one. That was that Rohir spent a lot of time with that. He put a lot of smoke in that room, and he wanted the light coming through the back by the bar to hold that shaft of light, but because the piece was so long, you can kind of watch the smoke disappear in the bar, because there weren't many people smoking cigars at that point, obviously. So we had to pick what we could get. But Fred's an amazing actor.
Yeah, very impressed with him. And boy, was he on time, 10 minutes, 4 seconds. Wow. He really knows how to nail the time.
Yeah, very, very good.
Maggie Grace, great hair.
Yes, great hair, but I was really, really happy with her performance. I thought she was right on the money. She was someone I didn't know and hadn't worked with, but I really thought she was. She caught the spirit of that one and made the reveal work really well. And it was kind of a very bittersweet performance.
So can you tell us anything about your work on the Van Helsing TV show? I believe you used to be the showrunner.
Yeah, I was a showrunner for 3 seasons, and then that involved being in Vancouver. It shot up in Canada. And so the 4th season, which was the last one to show, I stayed in New York and executive produced from there and wrote from home, which was, after a few years on the road, it felt good to stay home. And then this season I was doing the same thing, and we shot three episodes over in Bratislava, over in Eastern Europe, and the rest will be shot in Vancouver. But of course, after business goes back to whatever it will go back to, but that's on hold like so many other things right now.
I appreciate you releasing these 10x10 series. We got some treats ahead of us, man and woman in their 50s. That's Richard Kind and Amy Madigan.
Yeah.
I don't want to give away too much, but both touch on religious themes.
Yeah, Richard is someone, he actually lives in my neighborhood in New York, so I run into him on the street all the time, and I've worked with him in the theater, and he just kind of came to mind as someone who would be perfect for his piece. And, it was a great piece for him, I think. And Amy Madigan, I'd worked with her husband, Ed Harris, a couple of times. But I'd never worked with her, and it was lovely to have her piece is very kind of sobering, you know, someone who's sort of lost the will to live. And that's a piece that she, I thought really brought a lot of dignity to and was lovely to work with. I'd met her before, but I'd never worked with her.
You touch on that theme some in How to Fight Loneliness.
Definitely, yes. It's one of those things that I think a lot of people feel is a subject that, you know, that it comes up more often now probably than in the past, you know, with people arguing for right to life treatment and the ability to make that selection in their life is one of the kind of obvious, to some people at least, obvious things that we should have some governance over. And then in many cases, you know, people find themselves in a position where they don't, you know, they're either unconscious or they haven't written a will or done, you know, things like that. And they're at the mercy of somebody else, you know, who's going to make that decision. And some people, I think, you know, feel very strongly about it. So it was an interesting kind of moral dilemma to put into a play. And so that was a fun play to work on.
So all of these are going to be made available?
Yeah, we're going to finish this week. We'll have the 50s, and then there's the couple from the following week are Bill Pullman, who is just a treat.
Oh, wow.
And Bill Pullman does one, and Judith Light does one that's quite beautiful as well. And after that, I think we're going to try and just run them, let them all play for a week in case people have missed any or people hear about it late. They'll have a chance, like, I guess, three weeks from now to be able to see any of them that they want to see.
You called Lorne Michaels at one point.
Yeah.
You're curious how that conversation went.
It was relatively short. It was on a Sunday, and I called his home. I had a friend who had his home phone number through a job of his. He, you know, basically had, in those days, like the Rolodex of the person he worked for. Yeah. And one day he was reading off names to me, you know, like Roman Polanski, Mick Jagger, you know, going through this list. And I'm like, oh, wow, this guy really is connected. He was an art dealer or something like that, as I recall. And my friend worked for him as like a, you know, a personal secretary. And then he read off Lorne Michaels. I was like, oh, my God, wow. I've always thought I could write sketches for that show.
And you were in your 20s at that point?
Oh, yeah. I was just out of college.
Wow.
And I was like, you know what? Give me that number. I'm going to try and give him a call. You know, better just to get right to the source, right? You know, and so I called him up, figuring Sunday was the day off, right? Which I was correct. And he picked up the phone. And I just, like, pitched in quickly. Like, I knew I had just minutes. And I was just like, you know, hey, I got your number from a friend. And I just wanted to, you know, I'm new to the city, but I'm great at writing quick, short things. And I would just love to work on the show. And maybe you could read something. And there's just no sound on the other side. And so you just keep babbling. And finally, I finished. And there was another, a bit more silence. And then he was like, how did you get my number? And I was like, oh, yeah, from a friend who happened to have it. He's like, well, please don't call me at home ever again. Just send your stuff into the studio, and I'll take a look.
Pretty ballsy.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you got to hit for the fence and
that's true.
And see what happens. And you know, I did send some stuff into NBC and never heard a word or anything, but I did see him years later. And I mentioned it to him, and the smile broke out on his face. He goes, oh, God, yes, I remember that. He's like, that's so hilarious that was you.
Oh, you made an impact.
Never worked on the show, unfortunately, but I at least got a smile out of him.
Yeah.
When we ran into each other.
Yeah, you've done comedy, Money Shot.
Yes, comedy. This, wow, what a tough thing to do.
You take out one word, you add a word, it's not funny, it's crazy.
It's like science, you know, it really is, and you don't think much about it because when it works, it just works. It's just like anything that someone does well, you just take for granted almost. But it's like, oh, it looks so easy that I could do it, and I'm here to tell you, it's not the easiest thing in the world. It's tough. So I haven't written too many or directed too many, but I certainly appreciate the craft and would be happy to do more.
There's a lot of funny moments in your first two films, In the Company of Men and Your Friends and Neighbors. Now, in Your Friends and Neighbors, what I gathered watching that, and still to this day, re-watching it, is that this man knows human nature very well. I'm wondering where that comes from, your blue-collar roots, working on a farm, your experiences growing up, reading Shakespeare. You know human nature so well, and you wrote all these characters in such a believable way. Nobody writes like this.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it's, yeah, you know, I guess a lot of writing is observing, you know, and it's not necessarily observing and using everything that comes from your family or from life but it is, you know, listening and making observations and note of, oh, that's that, and that's how someone reacted during that. It's a lot of psychology. I think I've had an interest in psychology for a long time, and it's really just knowing the psychology of people who don't happen to exist, but they have feel as if they do, and if the psychology is right. I also think that audiences have gotten so much more savvy, you know, about psychology and that sort of thing, and so they know when you're talking bullshit, you know, about human nature as well. So it's, you know, you're twice as important for you to really be on the money with what you're saying about people and women, whoever it is.
And watching a bunch of Westerns as you're growing up and that kind of thing.
I did do a lot of that. A lot of war movies, a lot of Westerns. Yeah, that was my father's favorite stuff. So he, you know, when he wanted to watch something, we pretty much gathered around. So that was what I got a lot of.
And finally, I'd just like to ask you about how you got involved with the St. Louis Actors Studios Twitter account, and how did that come about to release this 10x10 series with them?
Oh, that was William Roth, who runs the St. Louis Actors Studio, came to me a few years ago and wanted to put some of my short plays together to make an evening at his theater. We did so, and we stayed in contact, and he eventually started a kind of new theater festival, short plays, using my name as someone that was kind of drawing, hopefully, people to it. And I would write a new piece each year. And so this is going into the seventh year of it. And it has a high school component where high school students come and they get to hear their first plays with, you know, professional actors doing them. And so it's a kind of a nice thing that's come out of staying connected with them. And they've also done a couple of my plays. Well, they were set to do a new one in the spring. And of course, like many theaters, they had to shutter those ideas and were not able to provide that for their audience. And so we said, what could we do in response to that? And I said, well, I've got this series that hasn't been seen all that much. I'd love to, you know, at least give them the chance to take a look at it. But then when we were doing it, we thought, well, we should, you know, we'll give the St. Louis patrons the heads up and get the jump to watch it a couple days in advance. And then we'll just open it up to anybody, because so many people are looking for something to watch, you know, in these past few weeks. So that's how we ended up showing it through St. Louis.
Thank you so much for this Easter present. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the rest of the series. Curious about what you're working on next, too. But what's next?
Well, yeah, hard to know, you know, what will be next and what part of the industry will come back first. And I kind of have my hands in a few different things. As I say, I've got a couple of plays out there that are waiting to, you know, find an audience, an actual audience now. And television, I would be happy to be doing something in that world. You know, we'll go back and finish. This is the last year for Van Helsing, so we'll finish that up. That's probably the first thing that will happen, just because that was already in progress. And there's a movie or two that I've got scripts for that I'm hoping to make sooner rather than later. So
great.
I'll keep kind of doing the same thing that I've been doing if I, you know, get the opportunity. And who knows how the audience will, you know, engage with them now in a new world, but we'll see how that goes.
Well, it's perfect time for a Van Helsing marathon on Sci-Fi.
I wish. They'll show anything before they do that.
It's true.
They come up with the funniest movies. I'm like, I watched Magnificent Seven on the other day, and I was like, where does this fit into Sci-Fi? But I guess it's, you know, genre is what they try to do. But so, very weird. But that's Sci-Fi.
The Island is getting a ton of streams. Didn't know if you were aware of that, but anyway.
Well, good for The Island. I had a terrible experience working on that. So it's a bit of a sore spot, but it is, you know, it's something I worked on. You learn something, whether things go well or not. It was, you know, you go in hoping that things are going to be great. And I had a tough experience with Netflix. So it was something that I was not really very happy with in the end, but, got to spend some time in the Dominican Republic, which was quite beautiful. So, you know, something comes out of that. But I'm happy people, you know, are watching if they are. But so it goes.
Tempest. Well, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Oh, pleasure. Yeah, great to talk to you. Take care. And So you're in Portland, is that right?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, nice part of the world. I grew up in Spokane. So
yes, yes,
I know Portland, yeah, pretty well. And I always liked that town. And I haven't been back for a little while, but it's last time I was there, it was really kind of booming, and so it's really nice to see.
Oh, yeah, that's still going on.
So enjoy.
Still going on, and great food.
Yeah.
It's really happening.
Great town. Really nice. Take care of yourself, and stay safe, and we'll talk someday soon, I hope.
Thanks so much. Really appreciate it.
All right.
Cheers.
You bet. Bye-bye.
Hello there.
Hello, Orion. Nice to connect with you. I never spoken to a vampire slayer before.
How are you doing, Greg?
Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. You know, I interviewed your buddy recently, AJ Gordon.
Oh, yes. Good friend of mine. Producer extraordinaire.
Yeah. He's very talkative, too, which is great for podcasts.
Oh, yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. And rare for producers.
Oh, and yes, yes. Not what I expected at all. I don't know what I really expected. I don't speak to very many producers. They're sort of the guys making everything happen behind the scenes. They're, you know, sort of the Wizard of Oz.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. I love speaking to guys that make things happen, that get those wheels turning. And what is your relationship with AJ? Because AJ is based in Portland and you're based in LA.
Yeah, I met AJ years and years back, and he actually helped me produce my first three movies. So that's how we have worked together. We originally met because I knew his godfather, and he said, "Hey, you should meet my godson. He's from Portland, Oregon, and he's going to film school." And I met him when he was doing that, and then pretty quickly realized we had a very similar idea about, you know, how to make indie movies, and we're very kindred spirits in that respect, you know.
And you guys are pretty young when you met, right?
Yeah. This is probably, like 14 years ago, 15 years ago now.
Right. He was a kid when he started producing
shows. Yeah. Yeah. He produced my first movie, The Truth, with John Hurd and Brendan Sexton III.
And Daniel Baldwin.
I mean, yeah, right out of film school. I mean, he had produced probably 20 shorts and a bunch of other stuff, but that was his first feature, mine too. So it was awesome, and he's helped me out on three other films. So yeah, I mean, the
you're all over his website.
Yeah. We've done some commercials. I there was a time. In the, I guess probably 2014, we were thinking about opening a commercial production company up there in Portland just because there was so much opportunity at that time. And it just never materialized because some other features popped up. But yeah, I love Portland. It's a city dear to my heart. And man, I would shoot there all the time if I could. You know, it's beautiful and the crews are super nice. And
yeah.
It's just great, talented actors.
What have you shot here? I mean, of all your productions, what have you shot in Portland?
Well, we shot AJ's award-winning horror short, Shanghai Faders, there.
Oh, yeah.
And then we did a whole bunch of spec commercials, like for Nike and, they're one for Verizon.
That's about as big as it gets.
Yeah, we did some of that stuff there, and that was kind of what we were hoping would be the launch pad. We had a couple features that we were going to shoot there. I mean, that's the other thing. What you see on our professional CVs is just the stuff we've gotten to make, which in the film business is probably 3-5% of the stuff. So
oh, man.
You can imagine how many things we really? Keep swinging the bat at, you know.
3-5%? Are you exaggerating?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
No, not
oh,
at all.
Oh, my
not
goodness.
At all. I mean, stuff falls in and out of production. Funding comes and goes away constantly. It's becomes a large part of your job as a producer and as a director to advocate for yourself and get some money to make your project, you know. Yeah.
But you did get this project Hawk and Rev Vampire Slayers. This is due out next year. This is really, really interesting project.
Yeah. I've just been finishing up the color right now. Trailers and teasers are being cut. We're out to the major film festivals trying to secure a big premiere. We already have a distributor lined up, and we probably will do a 5-city theatrical because it's kind of it's that sweet spot between comedy and horror that can make just a really fun kind of event experience for an audience.
I'm loving the premise of this film, and I read the synopsis. You play Philip Hawk Hawkins, who's very gung-ho. You're in the army again in this film, or you're a veteran again, and you got kicked out for staking a fellow soldier. And there's a website for this film, Hawk and Rev. You got this amazing headband. Yeah. I'm curious what the vibe is. Like, it's sort of a horror Karate Kid / horror film, 80s, 90s.
This is, you're pitching it right as we speak. So let me first of all say, I was born in Zimbabwe. I lived there the first 10 years of my life. I moved to the United States in the mid 80s to Los Angeles. At the height of 80s, the height of the 80s film boom of Goonies, Karate Kid, Big Trouble in Little China, all these kind of really campy horror movies as well, like Nightmare on Elm Street and, all this kind of stuff. So the tone of the movie is like, as if the
retro.
Yeah, super retro, but also has kind of a modern, snappy comedic vibe. We're big fans of Edgar Wright, and it definitely has some of that vibe in it. So we've got a guy who's just convinced that the supernatural exists. He's keeps getting in trouble for it. No one believes him when he sees this band of vampires that have come and infested this this warehouse and office park that he guards at night.
It's the boy who cried wolf. Wolf, right?
Exactly. And then he's like, you know what? I'm going to go hunt that wolf on my own. No, wait a second. I'm going to convince this guy who is even dumber than me to go with me. And that's Rev. And then they go on this weird little journey, almost like Napoleon Dynamite or something like that. And they discover a twist about this band of vampires that also plays goth techno music. And they have a mentor who mistreats them, and it almost has a Coen Brothers, fantastical kind of fairy tale vibe, and has a very warm ending and heartfelt kind of thing. And there's just enough 80s homage retro stuff to make it really fun if you know that era, but not too much to where you're like, well, I don't know about that. That's weird. So you get both. I don't know.
Well, I love indie films that don't take themselves too seriously. I think there was a picture of a production photo of someone in a gimp mask.
Oh yeah. So one of the band members is a gimp, and
of course.
And so we have very modern relationships in the movie. Like there's definitely some of that kind of vibe where we're very, it's a pretty progressively minded movie of that. And that's one thing that kind of we cherry picked from this time to kind of add into that. But there's a very funny thing that will happen once all the final credits are out for this movie, because so many people played that game, man. Let me just say. There are like 9 alt gimps. It's very funny. But the really cool thing is that Ari Schneider, who plays Rev, actually was the main gimp, which is pretty cool.
I mean, he was in Elijah's Ashes. I mean, he's an old friend of yours?
Yeah. He and I, he's actually my brother. So I'm married to his older sister. We were part of a 2-man improv group called the Double Pistols for years here in Los Angeles. We're very heavy into the indie kind of improv scene. Yeah, he and I co-wrote Elijah's Ashes together. We performed opposite each other in there playing half brothers. He was in all my commercials. He has a much bigger acting career than I do.
Yeah, I checked out his IMDb page. He's very active.
Yeah, super talented guy. He's actually in the new film I'm working on as well called Baby Monitor, which may get a title change to Listen Carefully. We're kind of on the fence of that right now, but he plays the main baby monitor voice and ends up doing about 100 voices in the movie. So it's just a testament to that man's talent. He's just very, very good.
By the way, was your headband for this custom made? Because it is amazing.
No, man. So this is the thing that we do as indie
Karate Kid.
Oh, yeah. Super duper Karate Kid. So what we do for all these movies is we try to find the cheapest stuff we can get and return, because our goal is to make the movies, as many movies as we can, for as little as possible. So that is straight off of Amazon, and it is a generic ripoff of a whole bunch of headbands and with no official design. So, I mean, it's great. And we try to do that with all of our stuff just to make it kind of fun and accessible, you know? Little May is it's an amazing short that it's in the process of being turned into a feature. It hasn't been announced yet, but Danielle Bisutti, who I acted opposite with in one of my first acting credits, Tropics, was an independent feature film. We got to shoot for 8 weeks down in Costa Rica, and Danielle and I played the romantic leads, and this is her directorial debut, Little May. She is an incredibly talented actor and has a massive resume. She's worked on all these Disney shows. She's been the leads in video games and all the stuff. And so I got my start as a visual artist, as a painter, and she wrote Little May with my art in mind and knowing me over all of these years. I don't play a character in it, but some of it is sort of loosely based on my struggle as an artist and how I've let a lot of that go. And they end up using a lot of the art, and Hunter John, who actually plays the lead and the artist, you know, kind of mimics painting some of my paintings. And it's about the evolution of an artist to not be as narcissistic and start giving back. It's an amazing short. It's beautiful. I really hope they get to turn it into a feature, because it's a great script and they're very talented people.
Holy cow. So you're the basis. You're pretty much the basis.
Kind of, yeah. I mean, it's in that territory for sure, I think.
Oh. How flattering.
I don't know. I mean, I was a little worried, to be honest. I'm like, oh, geez, hopefully this is going to be not make too much fun of me. And it didn't. It's very, you know, kind of diverged away from me in a lot of respects. And that kind of made it a better project, because I've always been a guy constantly trying to make stuff. That's kind of what I do, either as an actor or director, producer, whatever.
Yeah, painter. That's not in your bio. I don't believe that you're a painter.
No. I mean, it was sort of a formative part of my life to understand visuals. And then I still do it for myself, but I don't really, you know, I don't show or anything like that. But I have hundreds of pieces, and it helps me deal with color theory and how to frame things, and just kind of, it gives all of my work a slightly off-kilter quality in either a comedic or scary way that I wouldn't get if I had just been a traditional writer-director, I think.
Yeah, like David Lynch, you know, you're just hitting all those levels. Now, you also played an Army veteran in another film, Repatriation. You're in fatigues, I think, in every scene.
Yeah.
So that must have been cheap for costuming.
It was very simple for costuming. That was a collaboration with my good friend Doug Mueller, who was my production designer on my first film, The Truth. He wrote and directed Repatriation. We shot for 3 weeks in Dubuque, Iowa, in the Midwest. in late winter. It was very cold. It is an amazing film. It's about stolen valor. So it's about what you believe to be a soldier's first night home in his small town in the Midwest, and this pub crawl that he's doing from this bus station to his dad's house on this kind of homecoming night where a lot of people are back in town and people are catching up. And, you know, you start to peel away the layers of this character who is pretending to be a soldier because of his mental health issues and his heroic complex that he has. It's a really artful and great movie. I love that.
You know, there are guys like that. I've known a few.
There are a lot, yeah.
Yeah, it's strange.
And while we were shooting in Dubuque, Iowa, we actually ran into a couple people who had turned some of them in, which was really interesting because we connected heavily with the veterans organizations around there. And it's a really big problem in the Midwest. It was great to play a character like that and really dig into a dramatic character because I've mostly been comedic based. And it's available on Amazon Prime and Tubi TV for free.
Oh, it's on Prime.
Oh, yeah, it's on Prime. And Indie Rice is this amazing independent distributor that is just growing tenfold per month. Took it on. We did a 1 week theatrical here in Hollywood 2 years ago. And yeah, it's available on Prime. It's an awesome drama. It's the kind of drama they don't really make anymore, like The Wrestler or something like that, that has a very strong position and holds to it. And it was amazing to work with Doug, and also just to not direct and just be an actor and produce was really interesting and fun.
You acted in Elijah's Ashes and you play the homophobic brother. You look very Northwest in this film.
Yeah, totally.
Where was that shot?
So that was shot in Central California around Carpinteria, Santa Barbara, and Ventura. I spent my high school years in Carpinteria, California, so we shot all around there.
Did you gain weight for that role? Because you look like a Northwesterner.
Yeah, I definitely gained some weight. And
you played the De Niro thing. You just gained the weight for the role.
Just ate pasta, drank beer. It was you know, real torture. It was torture. I mean, I love the Northwest. I mean, a lot of my life, I actually look more like that than the other things that are out there.
Now you're just this slim, beautiful creature. Okay, so Baby Monitor, that's the other film that you're working on right now. I saw a picture of you doused in blood. So this is a horror film too, another horror film.
Yeah, so there is a lot of blood in it. It is a psychological horror, though. So it is more in the vein of David Lynch and Jacob's Ladder and that kind of thing. So Baby Monitor, it's a very contained, high-pressure kind of ode to David Lynch and Hitchcock in my mind. And so I play a young father who is left alone with his three-month old daughter for the first time while his wife goes out and has a life with her girlfriends. Baby goes missing. Someone starts to try to extort money from him through the baby monitor, and he goes on this journey. Yeah. So he is living a semi-corrupt life in his job as an assistant bank manager. And the baby monitor uses that against him to extort money from him and try to get his daughter back. And it ends up being this kind of Jacob's Ladder-esque story for new parents, because it has two major twists that are pretty mind-bending, and these amazing kind of hallucinatory sequences that are it's really awesome. Very different than anything I've made before, and just so fun to work on. I can't wait for people to see it, because it is still funny in this kind of really dark funny games way, with the sense of humor that Ari brings to all these voices in the baby monitors. And I let that slip. Baby monitors. There's so many baby monitors. And just when you think you know what the plot will be, you'll be wrong. I love that about it. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah.
Looking forward to seeing this. Hopefully there's a Northwest premiere for both these films, Hawk and Rev and Baby Monitor.
Definitely.
Well, thanks so much, Vampire Slayer. This is really fantastic, and looking forward to lots of blood.
I really hope we play Hawk. Let me just say this now. We are going to screen Hawk and Rev, Vampire Slayers, in Portland with a live goth band with all kinds of blood. It's going to be great. It's going to be fake blood, but it'll be a beautiful night, and people will laugh. And
well, I love the poster. Oh, yeah. I love the fonts. I love it.
So two very awesome and pretty semi-famous designers worked on those two aspects for us, which Jared Hageman is Croman Lighting. If you look him up online, he's CromanLighting.com. He's a very famous font designer and title designer who worked on Kung Fury and just all these new movies that are coming out. Very 80s homage-y.
Wow. That's the best of the best. Best of the genre.
Exactly. And then the guy who did the poster image is a man called The Dude Designs. And he, if you look him up, he has got thousands of these really famous horror posters. And we were just lucky enough that they liked the concept. And they're like, sure, we'll give you guys a shot. And, you know, they made magic. They really did. I love it.
Wow. Really looking forward to this event. Thanks again, RBG. Yeah. Much obliged, RBGfilms.com. Much obliged. Thanks for chatting with us today.
Yeah, appreciate it, Greg. Take care, buddy.
You too. Cheers.
Bye.
I'm Gregory Day. You've been listening to the Portland Podcast. Today's show was produced and edited by me. If you'd like to contact me directly, you can reach me at greg@pdxpodcast.com. We'll be back with a brand new show very shortly. See you then.